morning of lovers sleeping tight, are rolling by like thunder now as I look in your eyes. I hold on to your body and feel each move you make. Your voice is warm and tender, a love that I could not forsake. 'Cause you're the whispers in the morning of lovers sleeping tight, are rolling by like thunder now as I look in your eyes. I hold on to your and feel each move you make. Your voice is warm and tender, a love that I could not forsake. 'Cause you're
sorry, we're just having a little trouble here, technical trouble at the radio. We should be able to fix it. Just stand in for a minute.
sono solo e sogno all'orizzonte, mancano le parole. Sì, lo so che non c'è luce in una stanza quando manca il sole. Se non ci sei tu con me, su le finestre mostra tutto il mio cuore che hai acceso. Chiudi dentro me la luce che hai incontrato per strada.
You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and the time now is a little after 7 o'clock on Tuesday. And again, it's time for the 32nd episode of Health and the Awakening of the Self. This program is concerned with restoring and maintaining your health, and it's also concerned with the awakening of the a consciousness to the real self. Man, know thyself, as written in the temple in ancient Greece. And it does this by a process of self-inquiry, or they're called in non-dualistic teachings, and in the East they're called Vedanta. So it's a process of introversion and realizing what your very nature is. It seems like we have two natures, two eyes. One eye is the universal eye of pure intelligence, pure spirit, pure consciousness, unassociated or unidentified with anything else. And the other eye that we, most of us, take ourselves to be is the eye that's identified with the personality, the ego, persona, which means mask. It's hiding something. It's hiding the real self. And this I, the identified one, is identified with hundreds of things. It's identified with the body. It's identified with what country you come from. I'm Irish, I'm American. It's identified with your sex. I'm male, I'm female. It's identified with your educational system, conditioned by your educational system. It's identified with what religion you belong to and what beliefs you have. So it's identified with hundreds of different things. And all that identification starts with the primary identification, which is, I am this body. A young child who looks in the mirror every so often, up to the age of 18 months, sees the body in the mirror but doesn't have any identification with that body. The child never says, oh, look, that's me. It's only after 18 months that it starts to associate the consciousness, who they are, with the body they see in the mirror. And this is encouraged by their environment. When the child sticks their toe in his mouth, he's encouraged by his whole family. When he starts to crawl, he's encouraged. When he starts to walk, he's encouraged. And all these different firsts start to associate it more and more, start to associate him more and more with the body that he's performing in. So we have these two eyes, the I, the personality, and the ego, and we have the other I, the pure, pristine consciousness, spirit, universal awakening. Buddha, when he spoke about the self, when he said the self is illusionary, it's non-existence, it doesn't exist, he was referring to the personality, the ego, and the persona, the person. And that great insight is still true today, as it was 2,500 years ago. With the techniques that we try to give out here on the radio, it will help you to move your awareness from your identification with this mocked-up self, this mocked-up self of thoughts, projections, memories, etc., etc., to move you into your real self, which is consciousness, pure consciousness, pristine consciousness. And as you move in that direction, you move into the area of more harmony with the universe, more joy, more bliss, more creativity, more love, and more compassion, and all the positive qualities that man has always striven for. But it does take some exercises to do. You won't fall into this state just by, by listening to the radio or by reading a book. You have to actually apply the exercises that we give out here, and also the guided meditation that we play on this station. All right, we had a little difficulty getting the show off the ground because something was cutting out, but that's the nature of mechanics, I suppose. Anyway, we'll jump right into it tonight because we just got an hour together, and the first program will be it will actually be the exercises of tonight. And when you hear that bell, that means the exercise for one of the exercises for the week. And it's done by Master Muji.
About concentration.
Oh.
What is it and how to use it, and just to make sure.
But you must have some specific question. cannot be general concentration.
Like I've read about holding on to the eye and concentrating on the eye.
Yes, yes.
And I'm not sure I understand it all.
This is very simple, actually. I don't find anything more simple than this. If you find that your many spiritual practices now is too tiring, it's too difficult, and a lot of exercise, a lot of time, all this. They say in these times, people, they don't want to give so much energy. Then I point you something very simple. That sense in you, the feeling I am, nobody put it there. Not even your parents didn't put this feeling there. The feeling I exist, I am. That simple sense in which you know you are. When you say I is I am. And the real implication of I am, it is consciousness. It is the godly principle inside each form that says I am. But that feeling I am, as soon as it manifests inside the body, it needs the body, because through the body the I am can taste experiencing. But somehow identification arises with the body, the instrument, and the feeling I am the body comes out of it. When the feeling I am the body registers in the consciousness, then other thoughts and other associations can come. I am the body, this is me. I am a woman, I am Israeli, I am English, I am this, I am that. All these other things can come onto that root idea that I am this body. Then I am the doer. I am the one who lives my life. All of these comes into play. And that is called ignorance. You see? So the I am itself is a very mysterious principle, because it appears as though God says I am and the devil says I am also. You see, I call it a kind of like a chameleon principle. It changes according to the background. So I can be very personal. When you say I, it can be very personal, and sometimes it's constantly shifting shape and size. From I am very personal, this is me, who you're talking to, and so on. And the same, very next second, I can be in the place of just the observing of it. And this observer is not personal. It's impersonal. It's silent, whole, peaceful. There's a picture I've seen before in India of two birds in a tree. One is busy making a nest and all these things, and the other one is just sitting there watching. This nest-building bird is the idea we have of ourselves, our life, who I am, what I've got to do in my life, my purpose. And the one that's sitting is really this feeling I am, just simply watching. So the I am, the intuitive sense I am, which has no birthday, it has no shape, it has no good days or bad days, it has no psychological history. In its presence, its watching, the feeling of the me, who has a definite context, who's a definite person with a definite personality, definite goals, ambition, attachments, relationships, all of that. That one is busy taking place. This one is emerging out of the one that watches somehow. They're kind of one, and yet there's a difference. So what I say is the sense I am should be allowed to stay only by itself. You try it. Don't allow the sense I am to contact or connect with other concepts and then somehow roll into a story or some picture. Just keep that sense I am to itself. Other thoughts will come to play. Say, come. Sometimes in the beginning, when you try this, you find tremendous distraction. It comes like waves. But also you are aware of those. You don't have to struggle with them. Try and find that silence, the silent I amness, and stay with it. Don't worry about what comes and goes. Stay only with that sense I am. Don't judge, don't interpret. Stay only with the intuition I am. Gradually, all these noises around will begin to drift off into the distance. And the sense I am, that intuition, will be felt to be alone, effortlessly. It has no edge, no boundary, no intention, no attachments, no desires. And it shines as pure peace, natural joy, spaciousness, and an intuitive sense that there's no ends or beginnings here. Get accustomed to this contemplation. That is, each time the attention goes out, it wants to contact other thoughts and to play and to manifest into more stories, bring it back into the I am-ness, stabilize the attention just in that place of I am. Get used to that current, a kind of current of joy, of serene detachment. It's there with you. It's not difficult. In the beginning, it might feel like a bumpy ride, but gradually something becomes easier and easier. And then in a short time, just the turning of the attention, immediately everything is space again. You get used to this feeling that inside this body and the body itself, it feels like space. Even if you got a big body like mine, still feel like space. Like space moving through space. Your sense of being is space.
And the question?
The question, who am I?
Yeah.
This question.
So
yes.
How do I combine the two, like
okay.
Concentration and the
you
question?
You can start only with what I've told you just now. Then the natural sense of the feeling I am is there by itself. The perfume arising out of this I am, I said, is peace and joy. This you will experience. Maybe in that state for a while, the question, who am I, doesn't come. Just only joy and space. At some point, the feeling I arises. Strong reaction, judgments, fears. Then they come in. When they come, also, don't struggle to push them down or to be distracted from them. Let them happen fully in the body. Don't look for any pill. Let it happen. Keep your eyes open. Feel their presence energetically in the body, how fear feels. How jealousy, fear of rejection, all these feelings, let them come. The feeling, this feeling of I, this crippling sense that makes the contraction in the body, all of that, let it happen first, rather than running quickly for remedies. Watch it, let it be there. Two things you can do. If it comes like this, just let it happen, and you try as much as possible just to be quiet in this. Don't judge, don't pick up, don't dive in anything. Just let it happen as though you're forced to witness it, but you're not to be involved. Then gradually you may come to find a space inside which is just quiet. In the midst of this moving tension, there's a feeling of quietude. And intuitively you'll feel, I'm here. When this feeling comes, the heat is off, the trembling somehow. It doesn't matter. Even when that is there, it feels that that becomes peace as well also. It's amazing, this discovery. But another thing you can do is in this turbulent state, when it comes, gradually the question, who suffers this? Who is the sufferer here? Not a cynical question. Innocent, no judgment. Find the sufferer. Because something is going, I can't bear this. This is too much. I think this is going to destroy me. This is overwhelming. Find out who is speaking this thing quietly. Who is speaking these words? Who is saying these things? Because until now, they have not been questioned. You have assumed that it's you. You have identified so firmly with that. So it's as though it is you. So now you've been invited to look. Who is suffering this? See if it can be found. Because it feels like the sufferer of this is something tangible. There's a lot of identity in this type of experience. Full of, it's loaded with identity. And where there is identity, there is an I entity behind it. See if this I entity can be found.
Okay.
Okay, the one point there that stood out for me is that if you have any negative emotions or feelings come, don't try to suppress them. Just try to observe them. Let them be. Their energy will dissipate after some time. But in that way, you can be rid of those feelings because they'll dissipate. Just like when you open a bottle of pop, the bubbles start come to the surface and they burst and are gone. But if you don't give them the space to be able to air their feelings, then it's possible you might suppress them again and have to deal with them at a later time. All right, so now we're going to have a singer called Mario Lanza.
Valencia, in my dreams it always seems I hear you softly call to me. Forever scent the breeze beside the sea. Valencia, in my arms I hold your charms beneath the blossoms high above. You love me. In Valencia long ago we found our paradise of love. In a magic dream of memory I see you again. In that old town far away beneath skies of Spain, that city of tender romances, so shy were your glances, and swift as the sunshine that dances through the orange grove. Valencia, in my dreams it always seems I hear you softly call to me. Valencia, where the orange trees forever scent the breeze beside the sea. Your charms beneath the blossoms high above. You love me. In Valencia long ago we found the paradise of love. Beneath the blossoms high above. You love me. In Valencia long ago we found a paradise of love.
That was Mario Lanza, a good singer. I don't think he's with us anymore, but he had some wonderful songs in his day, and that was about called Valencia. And in my younger days, I tramped around Valencia in Spain, learning flamenco and doing other things. Okay, now we're moving on to more of a medical part of the show. And this is presentation by Jill Bolt Taylor, and she was a neuroanatomist studying the brain, as she'll tell us in the interview, in the presentation, and she had a slow bleed in her left brain, and over 4 hours things started happening to her. She was at home. But she knew what was happening. She knew basically what was going on eventually, because she was a neuroanatomist studying the brain. So she knew which part of the brain was changing and losing ability and stuff like that. So let me just cue it up for you right now. And it jumped somehow. Let me see if I got it back, but it's going to be just a minute or something before I can get it online here. I found it now. It's from a TED talk. I mentioned TED before. It's an organization.
I grew up to study the brain because I have a brother who has been diagnosed with a brain disorder, schizophrenia. And as a sister, and later as a scientist, I wanted to understand, why is it that I can take my dreams, I can connect them to my reality, and I can make my dreams come true? What is it about my brother's brain and his schizophrenia that he cannot connect his dreams to a common and shared reality, so they instead become delusion? So I dedicated my career to research into the severe mental illnesses, and I moved from my home state of Indiana to Boston, where I was working in the lab of Dr. Francine Bennis in the Harvard Department of Psychiatry. And in the lab, we were asking the question, what are the biological differences between the brains of individuals who would be diagnosed as normal control, as compared with the brains of individuals diagnosed with schizophrenia, schizoaffective, or bipolar disorder? So we were essentially mapping the microcircuitry of the brain, which cells are communicating with which cells, with which chemicals, and then in what quantities of those chemicals. So there was a lot of meaning in my life because I was performing this type of research during the day. But then in the evenings and on the weekends, I traveled as an advocate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. But on the morning of December 10, 1996, I woke up to discover that I had a brain disorder of my own. A blood vessel exploded in the left half of my brain. And in the course of 4 hours, I watched my brain completely deteriorate in its ability to process all information. On the morning of the hemorrhage, I could not walk, talk, read, write, or recall any of my life. I essentially became an infant in a woman's body. If you've ever seen a human brain, it's obvious that the two hemispheres are completely separate from one another. And I have brought for you a real human brain. Yes. Thank you. So this is a real human brain. This is the front of the brain, the back of the brain with the spinal cord hanging down. And this is how it would be positioned inside of my head. And when you look at the brain, it's obvious that the two cerebral cortices are completely separate from one another. For those of you who understand computers, our right hemisphere functions like a parallel processor, while our left hemisphere functions like a serial processor. The two hemispheres do communicate with one another through the corpus callosum, which is made up of some 300 million axonal fibers. But other than that, the two hemispheres are completely separate. Because they process information differently, each of our hemispheres think about different things, they care about different things, and dare I say, they have very different personalities. Excuse me. Thank you. It's been a joy. Our right human hemisphere is all about this present moment. It's all about right here, right now. Our right hemisphere, it thinks in pictures, and it learns kinesthetically through the movement of our bodies. Information in the form of energy streams in simultaneously through all of our sensory systems, and then it explodes into this enormous collage of what this present moment looks like, what this present moment smells like and tastes like, what it feels like, and what it sounds like. I am an energy being connected to the energy all around me through the consciousness of my right hemisphere. We are energy beings connected to one another through the consciousness of our right hemispheres as one human family. And right here, right now, we are brothers and sisters on this planet, here to make the world a better place. And in this moment, we are perfect, we are whole, and we are beautiful. My left hemisphere, our left hemisphere, is a very different place. Our left hemisphere thinks linearly and methodically. Our left hemisphere is all about the past, and it's all about the future. Our left hemisphere is designed to take that enormous collage of the present moment and start picking out details, details, and more details about those details. It then categorizes and organizes all that information, associates it with everything in the past we've ever learned, and projects into the future all of our possibilities. And our left hemisphere thinks in language. It's that ongoing brain chatter that connects me and my internal world to my external world. It's that little voice that says to me, hey, you got to remember to pick up bananas on your way home. I need them in the morning. It's that calculating intelligence that knows, that reminds me when I have to do my laundry. But perhaps most important, it's that little voice that says to me, I am. I am. And as soon as my left hemisphere says to me, I am, I become separate. I become a single, solid individual, separate from the energy flow around me and separate from you. And this is a portion of my brain that I lost on the morning of my stroke. On the morning of the stroke, I woke up to a pounding pain behind my left eye. And it was the kind of pain, caustic pain, that you get when you bite into ice cream. And it just gripped me. And then it released me. And then it just gripped me. And then it released me. And it was very unusual for me to ever experience any kind of pain, so I thought, okay, I'll just start my normal routine. So I got up and I jumped onto my CardioGlider, which is a full body, full exercise machine. And I'm jamming away on this thing, and I'm realizing that my hands look like primitive claws grasping onto the bar. And I thought, that's very peculiar, and I looked down at my body, and I thought, whoa, I'm a weird-looking thing. And it was as though my consciousness had shifted away from my normal perception of reality, where I'm the person on the machine having the experience, to some esoteric space where I'm witnessing myself having this experience. And it was all very peculiar, and my headache was just getting worse. So I get off the machine, and I'm walking across my living room floor, and I realize that everything inside of my body has slowed way down. And every step is very rigid and very deliberate. There's no fluidity to my pace, and there's this constriction in my area of perception, so I'm just focused on internal systems. And I'm standing in my bathroom getting ready to step into the shower, and I could actually hear the dialogue inside of my body. I heard a little voice saying, okay, you muscles, you got to contract, and you muscles, you relax. And then I lost my balance, and I'm propped up against the wall. And I look down at my arm, and I realize that I can no longer define the boundaries of my body. I can't define where I begin and where I end, because the atoms and the molecules of my arm blended with the atoms and molecules of the wall. And all I could detect was this energy, energy. And I'm asking myself, what is wrong with me? What is going on? And in that moment, my brain chatter, my left hemisphere brain chatter, went totally silent. Just like someone took a remote control and pushed the mute button. Total silence. And at first, I was shocked to find myself inside of a silent mind. But then I was immediately captivated by the magnificence of the energy around me. And because I could no longer identify the boundaries of my body, I felt enormous and expansive. I felt at one with all the energy that was, and it was beautiful there. And then all of a sudden, my left hemisphere comes back online, and it says to me, hey, we got a problem, we got a problem, we got to get some help. And I'm going, oh, I got a problem, I got a problem. So it's like, okay, I got a problem. But then I immediately drifted right back out into the consciousness, and I affectionately refer to this space as La La Land. But it was beautiful there. Imagine what it would be like to be totally disconnected from your brain chatter that connects you to the external world. So here I am in this space, and my job and any stress related to my job, it was gone. And I felt lighter in my body. And imagine all of the relationships in the external world and any stressors related to any of those, they were gone. And I felt this sense of peacefulness. And imagine what it would feel like to lose 37 years of emotional baggage. Oh, I felt euphoria. Euphoria. It was beautiful there. And then again, my left hemisphere comes online and it says, hey, you've got to pay attention. We've got to get help. And I'm thinking, I got to get help. I got to focus. So I get out of the shower and I mechanically dress and I'm walking around my apartment and I'm thinking, I got to get to work. I got to get to work. Can I drive? Can I drive? And in that moment, my right arm went totally paralyzed by my side. Then I realized, oh my gosh, I'm having a stroke. I'm having a stroke. And then the next thing my brain says to me is, wow. This is so cool. This is so cool. How many brain scientists have the opportunity to study their own brain from the inside out? And then it crosses my mind, but I'm a very busy woman. I don't have time for a stroke. It's like, okay, I can't stop the stroke from happening, so I'll do this for a week or two, and then I'll get back to my routine. Okay, so I got to call help. I got to call work. I couldn't remember the number at work. So I remembered in my office, I had a business card with my number on it. So I go into my business room, and I pull out a 3-inch stack of business cards, and I'm looking at the card on top. And even though I could see clearly in my mind's eye what my business card looked like, I couldn't tell if this was my card or not, because all I could see were pixels. And the pixels of the words blended with the pixels of the background and the pixels of the symbols, and I just couldn't tell. And then I would wait for what I call a wave of clarity. And in that moment, I would be able to reattach to normal reality. And I could tell, that's not the card, that's not the card, that's not the card. It took me 45 minutes to get 1 inch down inside of that stack of cards. In the meantime, for 45 minutes, the hemorrhage is getting bigger in my left hemisphere. I do not understand numbers. I do not understand a telephone, but it's the only plan I have. So I take the phone pad and I put it right here. I take the business card, I put it right here, and I'm matching the shape of the squiggles on the card to the shape of the squiggles on the phone pad. But then I would drift back out into La La Land and not remember if when I come back if I'd already dialed those numbers. So I had to wield my paralyzed arm like a stump and cover the numbers as I went along and pushed them so that as I would come back to normal reality, I'd be able to tell, yes, I've already dialed that number. Eventually, the whole number gets dialed, and I'm listening to the phone, and my colleague picks up the phone, and he says to me, and I think to myself, oh my gosh, he sounds like a golden retriever. And so I say to him, clear in my mind, I say to him, this is Jill, I need help. And what comes out of my voice is, roo, roo, roo. And I think, oh my gosh, I sound like a golden retriever. So I didn't know that I couldn't speak or understand language until I tried. So he recognizes that I need help, and he gets me help. And a little while later, I'm riding in an ambulance from one hospital across Boston to Mass General Hospital. And I curl up into a little fetal ball. And just like a balloon with the last bit of air just right out of the balloon, I just felt my energy lift and just, I felt my spirit surrender. And in that moment, I knew that I was no longer the choreographer of my life. And either the doctors rescue my body and give me a second chance at life, or this was perhaps my moment of transition. When I woke later that afternoon, I was shocked to discover that I was still alive. When I felt my spirit surrender, I said goodbye to my life, and my mind was now suspended between two very opposite planes of reality. Stimulation coming in through my sensory systems felt like pure pain. Light burned my brain like wildfire, and sounds were so loud and chaotic that I could not pick a voice out from the background noise, and I just wanted to escape. Because I could not identify the position of my body in space, I felt enormous and expansive. like a genie just liberated from her bottle. And my spirit soared free like a great whale gliding through a sea of silent euphoria. Nirvana. I found nirvana. And I remember thinking, there's no way I would ever be able to squeeze the enormousness of myself back inside this tiny little body. But then I realized, but I'm still alive. I'm still alive, and I have found nirvana. And if I have found nirvana, and I'm still alive, then everyone who is alive can find nirvana. And I pictured a world filled with beautiful, peaceful, compassionate, loving people who knew that they could come to this space at any time and that they could purposely choose to step to the right of their left hemispheres and find this peace. And then I realized what a tremendous gift this experience could be. What a stroke of insight this could be to how we live our lives. And it motivated me to recover. 2.5 weeks after the hemorrhage, the surgeons went in and they removed a blood clot the size of a golf ball that was pushing on my language centers. Here I am with my mama, who's a true angel in my life. It took me 8 years to completely recover. So, who are we? We are the life force power of the universe with manual dexterity and two cognitive minds. And we have the power to choose moment by moment who and how we want to be in the world. Right here, right now, I can step into the consciousness of my right hemisphere where we are. I am the life force power of the universe. I am the life force power of the 50 trillion beautiful molecular geniuses that make up my form, at one with all that is. Or I can choose to step into the consciousness of my left hemisphere, where I become a single individual, a solid, separate from the flow, separate from you. I am Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, intellectual, neuroanatomist. These are the we inside of me. Which would you choose? Which do you choose? And when? I believe that the more time we spend choosing to run the deep inner peace circuitry of our right hemispheres, the more peace we will project into the world, and the more peaceful our planet will be. And I thought that was an idea worth spreading. Thank you.
I think that was an extraordinary experience that we can listen to and get an idea. You know, I play this purposely because recently we had, I think his name is Professor Bruce Clayson, I believe, who was a professor in the University of Virginia, and we had him on the show here, and he was telling us about his scientific experiments with reincarnation and near-death experience. And the title of his talk was Consciousness Doesn't Need a Brain. So in this situation here, it's quite interesting because in order to, we can start with pure awareness, pure consciousness. Some people call that the soul, but whatever you call it, it's that level of beingness or consciousness that's unassociated with or unidentified with anything in the material or the world of form. And so here we have a different experience which tells us that in order to for that consciousness to function in the material world, in the world of form, you need the brain to be functioning, because all the different areas in the brain are related to a specific function. And we saw here how she lost different functions lost her speech or ability to understand speech and other functions. So we can see that the physiology of the brain is important if you're intending to function and live in this particular world, in this physical world. Now, somebody with Alzheimer's disease, they lose these, a lot of these different areas in the brain. And while they're still self-aware and they can be quite peaceful and quite happy because they have their essential awareness, this awareness being aware of itself is a good way to express it, I think. their essential awareness, and but they can't function in the relative world. They can't interact with people. They can't function. They can't carry out the necessary, duties of day-to-day life. So we do need our brain for this, obviously. But this presentation is in many ways in contrast with the one that Professor Bruce Grayson talked about in the show maybe two or three weeks ago. Incidentally, you can access these shows. I've archived them. I have archived the last maybe 10 or 12 shows on it's called Radio for All. The four is the letter 4.net, and you go in there and you put the name of the show, Health and the Awakening of the Self, into the search engine, and you'll come up with 9 or 10 shows, and then you can click on whichever show you want to listen to. All right, that was very good. So I hope that's stimulating to you, and maybe it will force you to think a little bit about consciousness and the brain and how we function. I think that's all I need to say about that. So we'll go back to some music. And as Mario Lanza has come on the scene here, he's going to sing Santa Lucia. It reminds me of the old days when I was touring around Italy with my school, and we had a bus driver who came from some part of Italy where everyone sings. Singing was a big thing. And he would sing all these famous songs, including this one. We called him Romeo because that suited his personality.
Sul mare luccica l'astro d'argento, placida è l'onda, prospero il vento. Sul mare luccica l'astro d'argento, placida è l'onda, prospero il vento. Oh!
Okay, that was Mario Lanza singing Santa Lucia. He's from Italy, of course, but he lived in the United States. I think he's a great singer, was a great singer, is a great singer, maybe wherever he is in the universe. And we'd like to thank the, while we're talking about the universe, we'd like to thank the universe for helping to bring some of this interesting knowledge out there to you guys. Let me see now. The next, we don't have a lot of time because we're almost on the hour, so I had to pick a short one to fill the gap. So we have Eckhart Tolle here, and he's going to talk. The name of the talk is The End of Suffering. As we dissolve and lose our strong identifications with the outer world and the different forms we're attached to, we can live more in the state of beingness. And that state has all the great qualities that one will ever want. It has the quality of freedom. It has the quality of fulfillment. It has the quality of joy and even bliss at times. And it has the quality of compassion and desire to help your fellow man. So it has all the qualities we could ever want. Whereas the false self, the non-existent self, as Buddha called it, has at its basis it has fear, uncertainty, fear of change, and it has the hankering always after something more. I'm not good enough. I need something more. I need more money. I need more bigger house, bigger car, whatever it is. Of course, money is to do with security. It's not secure. So it thinks if it has another $1 million, it'll be secure. Whereas a person who's activated their inner beingness is secure, irrespective of how much money he has or has not. All right, so we'll now come to this short talk. It's only 5 or 6 minutes.
You won't surrender, which means, surrender means only accept this moment as it is. But you won't be able to surrender unless you're completely fed up with suffering. You've had enough suffering. And at some level, you recognize that most of your suffering is self-created. It is created out of resistance to what is. It is created out of an interpretation of something that is. It comes from a thought, from an interpretation, not from the situation. So you realize really that I've had enough suffering, and only when you've truly had enough suffering in your life are you able to say, I don't need it anymore. Suffering is a wonderful teacher. Suffering is most people's only spiritual teacher. And suffering deepens you. It gradually erodes the mind-made sense of self, the ego. And for some people, the point arrives where they realize I have suffered enough. And that, for example, is the case with almost all the people who come to a retreat. If you ask them, they've all had their share of human suffering. Otherwise, they wouldn't be open to the message. They've had their share of human suffering, and they've reached a point where they are ready to listen to the message that says there is another way to live. There is another way in which you can live that does not create further suffering for yourself. Because to a large extent, humans create their own suffering. And so when you are ready to hear that message, and that's really the message that is in every religion, that's the message, the central message of Buddhism is the end of suffering. And even the central message of the teaching of Jesus is finding the pearl of great price, finding the kingdom of heaven that is within you here and now, as Jesus says. And that, of course, is the end of living in a state of suffering. So one could say that you need suffering for you to realize, for you to come to a point of realization that you do not need to suffer anymore. There's a paradox here. If I had not suffered, this teaching would not exist. So you could say it has come partly as a result of intense suffering, because as a human being I would not have evolved spiritually if I had not suffered. So suffering was my main teacher, and suffering is for many people their main teacher. But then some people are, when they are ready, they come into contact with a spiritual teaching or teacher, and that can speed up the process of realization that you don't need to suffer anymore. You're ready to hear that. So that was, the Buddha talked about nothing else already 2,600 years ago, that there can be an end to self-inflicted suffering. And when you don't inflict suffering on yourself anymore, and remember, it's the thoughts, your thoughts make you suffer more than anything else. It's not usually the situation, it's your interpretation of the situation, of how dreadful it all is. And so when you see that, then you see there is another way to live in which I no longer mentally argue with what is. And that's the end of self-inflicted suffering. And if I no longer inflict suffering on myself, I no longer inflict suffering on others, because the two go together.
Okay, that's the end of that little presentation about suffering. I did a whole show on suffering here at one stage in the past. Now we're coming towards the end of the show, so I'll share a few things with you. If you want to get into the archives of these programs and listen to any past program, at least the last maybe 10 programs, I have them archived in a site called Radio for All. The 4 is the letter 4, so radioforall.net. And you put in the name of the show, Health and the Awakening of the Self, into the search engine, and all the shows will come up, and then you press on whichever one you want. If you'd like to, last night I had a gentleman from Monterey called Charles, and he wanted to know how you spell the Master Muji, how you spell Muji, and it's M-O-O-J-I, because he wanted to look him up, his other presentations on YouTube. So all these teachers and singers that I'm talking with you tonight about can be followed up on YouTube. And you can follow up their teachings. There is a wonderful site for people who are interested in spiritual awakening, and that site is called Buddha at the Gas Pump. The regular gas pump, Buddha at the Gas Pump. And it has somewhere around 300 different teachers from all over the States and all over the world, indeed. And they get to be interviewed and present some of their ideas. So if you're looking for a spiritual teacher that you relate to, this will be a very good site. And so it's called Buddha at the Gas Pump. All right, I think that's everything for this evening. It's just about time up, as it were. Until we meet again, which will be next week, this program will be going on twice a week. So stay tuned, and we'll progress our consciousness together. It's good being with you. And once again, goodbye for the moment.